I had a cousin went through that. He made some serious money. He was a ship's captain for Xerxa and traveled all over the world. And he never would tell me how much he made, but I know it was way up there, a hell of a lot more than I made, you know. But yeah, Bath Ironworks, that was a good place to learn a trade and get the hell out of. Probably everybody within a 60-mile radius works there.
Yeah.
You know, I knew guys that would drive an hour and a half. And that's, you know, that's quite a distance up there.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Combat Radio Network. This is Three Men and a Microphone, recorded inside the Iron Mike Studio, located in the Military Exchange on Route 332 in Canandaigua. Three Men and a Microphone is an opinion show based on the ins and outs, the news, politics, and scuttlebutt about town and the city of Canandaigua. Beautiful, historical Canandaigua, New York, where the hops grow higher, the grapes grow sweeter, and the sun always shines. I am your host, Corporal Tim Thornton, and this is Three Men and a Microphone.
Especially in the winter months.
Oh, gee. It was one night, I remember, I always worked second shift there. I was a welder, and that was January or February, and they actually shut the yard down. Well, they told us if we wanted to go home, we could. And with what the actual temperature was, I don't know, but it was minus 69 with the wind chill and blowing right up the Kennebec River there.
It didn't work at all. It wasn't ready. Welcome to WOKR 1310. This is Civil War Radio on Three Men and a Microphone, and I'm here today with Armin Marinetti, Michael Yarger from Canandaigua, Facebook 2020, and our videographer, Melissa Walker, and out in the distance, the gentleman from Scope, and they'll be on in a little bit. We're also going to have some interviews with the fire chief from Canandaigua and 5th Chapter. So right now, Civil War Radio, Armin Marinetti. And how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Good morning, everybody. I'm good doing
morning.
Fine. What was that?
I'm doing
fine.
A little hereditary jump in there.
I don't know where that came from. Anyways, good morning. Here we are, Civil War Radio. Should we do our intro?
Sure.
Okay, so we're going to be...
Civil.
And what's that mean?
That means we're going to get along with each other once in a while.
We're going to try. Give it our best shot. And
the war part, which is battle... Which we're going to disagree, but if we disagree, we're going to let it go with that.
Yeah.
And still be civil.
And still be civil.
Very good. Very good. So, some old business first, okay? I put out there our quick question quiz a couple weeks ago, and we had some winners, so I want to say thank you to, first of all, Jim Ledsam. He's a realtor that is a member of our Civil War Radio group, and he saw the question on Facebook. And his question that he answered was, what are the three branches of the U.S. government? And he knew the answer. And we do, too. What are they, the three branches?
Let's see. There's the executive.
Judicial.
And legislative.
Correct. So that was the first gentleman. Then there's another gentleman who's going to be a guest of ours coming up here soon. His name is Reed Robbins. He knew the answer to the second question, and it was dealing with why we have a Second Amendment. What is the number one reason why we have a Second Amendment in our U.S. Constitution? And his answer was to protect us against tyranny from a government that is too powerful, too, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a monarchy used to be. So tyrannical government. So and in general, it's self-defense as well nowadays. So he got that right. Jim Ledsam got a $25 gift certificate to Tim Hortons. That was by his request, and we've got one right down the street here, and there's locations throughout. He could use that anywhere. And as far as Reed Robbins right now, it looks like he's probably going to get a $25 gift certificate to Eric's Office restaurant, which is just around the corner. And if you get a chance, you should go there because the food's pretty good, service is pretty good. It's a good place to go.
So, pretty good.
All right. I think that takes care of old business. Can you guys think of anything else?
No.
I should hit on before we go to the next, the new topic?
No, go ahead.
All right. So the new topic, following our guidebook here, the U.S. Constitution, we're up to the third, and I think because the third is so short, we could probably do the Fourth Amendment as well today. So let's begin with a little bit of reading so everybody can be bored to tears. I'll make it short because the Third Amendment is short. This one states that no soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house. Now, quartered means you put them up. You provide them with a room, food, maybe even help them with their wash, things like that. So no soldier in time of peace shall be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. So as you can see, when they write these amendments, there's always a little wiggle room. So that last part, for example, prescribed by law. Fortunately, with this amendment, it's never been tested to the level of the Supreme Court. So when I was doing research, and I'll give you a couple of my sources, I found another one called study.com, which is good for teachers and students, where you can go on and see lesson plans and get a little – you have to subscribe if you want the full shot, but they do give you enough of a blurb on their free page to get some good answers. Another source that I like to use is constitutioncenter.org. So go check these things out if you want to learn more about our U.S. Constitution. And as I was saying, this particular amendment has never been brought up to the level of Supreme Court review. Okay?
So could you give an example of when that was?
Yes.
A violation?
Yes, a little bit of history. Back in 1765, before the American War for Independence against Great Britain, there was a lot of rumblings going on about throwing England out of the New World, America, and the king didn't like that. So he decided to keep an eye on things, that he'd probably have some of his soldiers, what we used to call as the Redcoats, what they called in Boston Lobsterbacks, I believe is the bad name that they use for the British troops. They would put them up in people that were thought to be troublemakers' homes. So in a sense, you had a soldier in your house kind of spying on you. And if they heard things about secret meetings, maybe there was ammunition hidden, things like that, they'd go back and tell the officers, and you might have a raid on your possessions. Remember the famous Lexington and Concord, where they were going to get the weapons from the colonists because of things that were being spoke about, revolution, for example. So, and that was called the Quartering Act, and people didn't like that. Even English people didn't like it because as I was doing research, I found out that it was done in England too. And the people from England didn't like having their own troops in their homes keeping an eye on things. So it was to the point where the founding fathers that wrote the U.S. Constitution felt it necessary to put that in the first 10 amendments, which are known as the Bill of Rights. Okay.
Now, you said hasn't been an infraction of that?
Well,
no.
There have been no cases that have risen to the Supreme Court regarding this particular article.
Yeah, it came close during the Civil War time because there were some troops that forced themselves to use facilities that were owned by civilians for food, for shelter, for heat, that type of thing. But there's never been anything that the Supreme Court has reviewed.
So I got a question for you. So in a theory, it hasn't happened since the Civil War, right? Can't think of any time the troops have been quartered in your house so that they can basically spy on you and make sure, keep an ear to the ground on what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So where are we today with that amendment?
Yeah, it's a Third Amendment to the U.S. Constitution.
When you have stuff like Amazon, was it Alexa?
Yeah.
Where you,
because I had her right here, and they're saying that the government can use Alexa or any of those other ones to listen into what you're doing, or you've got those reverse cameras on your laptop that can watch you.
You know,
you've
what?
Got drones that can fly around your yard.
That's
and
an
listen
excellent
in.
Question, Tim. But
how close actually, is that to that?
It actually is a better question for our next amendment, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, Tim, you're a little bit always a little bit ahead of the curve, and those thoughts went through my mind as well, and that will come up when we get to the Fourth Amendment. But before we get to the Fourth Amendment, I just want to tell a quick story. I taught U.S. history in the city of Rochester. And a lot of the young students in their mid-teens, 15 to 17 years old, they would kind of poo-poo this Third Amendment. They said, what's the big deal, right? You know, a soldier, why not have a soldier in your house? So I try to make things relative to their world. So I said, all right, let's pretend. Let's pretend that the Rochester Police Department decides that they're going to put a police officer in your home to keep you safe. So there's a lot of crime in the neighborhoods, theft and so on. So Rochester decided they're going to put a police officer in your home. What do you think? Good idea, right? Yeah, I heard everybody starts screaming and yelling, no, we don't want that. I said, well, now you know how they felt.
Right. That's a great way to make it relevant.
Yeah. So I think it helped them to learn why this was important.
Especially that part about how England was doing that to save money.
Yes.
To put that burden on the local gentry,
yeah.
You know, and say, okay, well, we'll house them, so you feed them,
yep.
Their horses, whatever. That's terrible.
And I don't know if there was any pay for the soldiers to be put up. I never saw anything. I don't think the pay was really the issue as much as that I don't want a British soldier who may be a potential enemy in my home. Okay?
Yep.
So, all right. So now, let's go on to the Fourth Amendment, which is a little bit more involved. And there is a current court case that we'll mention after we do a little explanation of the Fourth Amendment, maybe a little bit of history as well. Okay? So, again, I'm going to do some reading. I apologize. But the Fourth Amendment reads like this. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects. Effects would be whatever else you have. Against unreasonable searches and seizures. Key phrase there. Unreasonable searches and seizures. Some wiggle room there. Because who determines what's unreasonable? Shall not be violated and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. So, this, in modern terms, means that before the law can search you, your person, your effects, your home, maybe even your vehicle, they should have a proper warrant, which is a legal document, usually stated by a judge, saying that they're looking for something in particular. Okay? So let's say, for example, you're a suspect in a theft. And there's enough evidence for the judge to say, yep, I'm going to give you a warrant. Go search their house looking for the helmet you stole from Iron Mike's. Okay? We got you on video. The helmet's gone. It looks like you took it. That might be enough to get law enforcement in your house to search for that lost helmet, that missing helmet.
Right.
Okay. Thoughts before I...
Okay, so there's some exceptions to having to have a warrant, right?
Yeah. I did see some exceptions. Remember the stop and frisk?
Right.
In New York City, which was causing some issues, where if a law enforcement officer... say, for example, they see you with a backpack and you're putting it on the ground and a parade is about to begin. We've had some moments in time where those backpacks might house explosives and people were hurt, like in the Boston situation a few years ago.
Right.
They may say, you know, that's reasonable cause for them to say, can we take a look in that backpack? Well, do you have a warrant? No, in this situation, I don't think we really need one. We'll do our duty, and then if there's a consequence afterwards, we'll deal with it.
Right.
Is that what you're thinking of?
Well, there's a bunch of them. I guess there's like six exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
One is a plain view exception.
Okay.
So if a cop pulls you over in your car, say, and he notices while he's talking to you, the driver that's sitting over there on the passenger seat, you've got a bunch of drugs or whatever,
mm-hmm. yep.
and he could see that just from his interaction with you, there's really no need to grab a warrant in a situation like that.
Good point.
Because it's just sitting out in plain view.
Yep.
Another one would be like an emergency or hot pursuit situation. Let's say a police officer is chasing after you, and we see this all the time, where a person may throw something away.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And the officer might see that go, but is still pursuing the person.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
Then they don't need to get a warrant in order to go back and look for whatever it was they saw you tossing away.
Okay.
So, I know there's a few of them. The stop and frisk was another one that you mentioned. And that's a good one. Like the backpack, that's a great example of that because. Mm-hmm. You know, we know what happened, you know, with the Boston Marathon, and mm-hmm. so.
And the SAFE Act took away the use of a warrant.
For certain things, and we're going to get to that with technology.
Yeah.
Like you were mentioning about the drones and about the internet and about the cell phones.
Right.
And then I'm going to just make one more short story, and then we'll get into those. Because that brings us up to that recent court case. Many, many years ago, when things seemed to be a little bit more liberal in the classic sense, you know, where we seemed to be more free, I was coming home late from work one night, and I was on Main Street here in Canandaigua and got pulled over because it was on a Saturday night after midnight, so you're a prime target at that time. And it was me and my buddy just driving home from work, and when we were asked if we would open our trunk, and we had nothing to hide, so we said, sure, we'll open the trunk. You know, this is, again, after midnight, we're off to the side, the lights are on, and not much traffic, thankfully. We open the trunk, and there's a couple cases of beer in the trunk, so... The police officer was nice enough to say, what's that for? Well, it just so happened there was a softball game the next day. This was a Saturday night. There was a softball game. So my buddy had to buy the beer, and it was all...
Still sealed
yeah,
up.
Yeah, there was nothing drank, right?
Right, out of, right.
So he goes, does it stay cold in there like that? Yeah, overnight it stays pretty good. Okay. Closed it up, and away. We didn't do anything wrong. We were coming from work. They let us go. So, but I thought that was interesting. I think we may have been able to say... No.
Sure, you could have said no.
Yeah, do you have a search warrant? I don't know for sure, but we had, like, no reason to say no. So that's why we just said, sure, go ahead. Take a look.
Looking in the trunk is a little invasive.
It is. Yeah, I didn't think much about it at that time. I think I was all of maybe 21 years old. And back then, you could drink at 18.
Right.
So I had no...
No qualms.
No qualms. I don't think I even knew it was in the trunk. It was my butt, to be honest with you. So, and unfortunately, it was after work. We didn't sit at the bar and have a few beers before we went home,
yeah.
thankfully.
Yeah.
And the DWI laws were a lot more lenient back in those days. This is the 80s, early 80s. So, but let's move on
okay.
to a current Supreme Court case. I've got to look at my notes here because my memory is always a little sketchy. This court case that I'm talking about is Carpenter versus the United States. And hopefully this fall we will get some information about how the Supreme Court has decided. For sources, I used a couple different locations, law.cornell.edu, which gives you a thumbnail sketch of the court cases. And then there's another one that I use that's more detailed, and it has links if you want to see everybody that's participated in the testimony. You can go and see everything you want about these particular Supreme Court cases. But in general, now I'm going to do this from memory. There was a gentleman that had a gang. And one of the money-raising operations was to steal cell phones from places like Radio Shack. So he would tell his gang members, this is our target, go steal this, this, and this, and then they would sell them, you know, underground in the neighborhoods. And he would always be smart enough to keep his distance. Never entered the Radio Shacks with the gang. He was just like the general, in a sense. And those were guys were the troops, okay, going out and doing their duty. Well, through technology and using ping technology, they found out by searching his cell phone that he was always in the neighborhood of the places that were hit the same time that these places hit. So he might have been around the block, but he was in striking distance from these different places that were hit. So they used that information to link him to the robberies. And the lower federal court level, I think he was found guilty, and he was sentenced to more than 100 years in prison. So it's reached the U.S. Supreme Court. Part of the issue is, okay, there was an earlier court case, let me see if I've got the name written down here, that decided that if you wanted to use cell phone call records, you needed a warrant. So the defense for this gentleman said, you guys are violating one of the earlier decisions of the Supreme Court. It was back in 2014. McDonald, I want to say. I wrote down the information. Do you know that?
It's in reference to the electronic discovery law. For evidentiary discovery.
Okay, do you remember the name of the court case by any chance? I'll look it up.
No, I don't.
Well, I'll tell you what. You guys, I'll give you the decision, and then I'll look up the case name. The Supreme Court, back in 2014, decided 9-0 that you must get a warrant for cell phone records. And I found the name of the case. It was Riley versus California was the name of that Supreme Court case in 2014. So there's a little bit of historic background that's recent, within the last 4 years or so. So we'll have to come back to that in October and see what...
Even when people go to court, they'll print off their emails or they'll print off their text messages. Mm-hmm. Technically, the judges are not allowed to allow those because it's against the evidentiary law for electronic discovery. Oh. They have to be subpoenaed and they have to go through the process with the companies.
Okay. Interesting. So,
So Tim was asking about Alexa.
Look at this picture of what we're talking about. This is the case. And this is the cartoon. They're pinging his phone while he's making a robbery.
So you know exactly where he is. Yeah. Going through the window there.
Right. So Tim was asking about, like, Alexa. Mm-hmm. Now, this is something that many of us are, if we don't already have it in our home, we're going to have it soon. And I'm hearing rumors that the federal government can actually take information from Alexa and use it in court cases against you. Is that, are they spying on us day to day?
It seems that way. Yeah, and what if one of the agencies was the U.S. Army or the Marine Corps? Why they'd want to be in your home, I'm not sure. But what if some of that information does go to a military organization? Would that be a violation of the Quartering Act? Yeah, you're not feeding them, you're not housing them, but they're almost sitting in your living room.
That's right.
Right?
Spying on you,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it seems that way to me.
Well, and you're paying for your own internet, you're paying for Alexa, you're paying for a cell phone.
You're paying for them to spy on you.
Right, so you're housing them.
Yeah. So who mentioned something about the exclusionary rule?
I don't know if that's been brought up.
That was in some of my research here. The exclusionary rule means that if there's an illegal search, and they come up with information, that information can be tossed out of court.
Right. can't be used in a court case.
Yeah. So anything that's acquired in violation of our Fourth Amendment rights will not be used against you in a court of law. That's the way I understand it.
Okay.
So that pretty much wraps up the educational part.
Okay. So one of the questions I want to ask you about is we see these drones flying everywhere, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, whether it's police departments, I think Ontario County Sheriff's recently acquired, if I'm not mistaken, 3 drones just for Troop E up here. You know, is that spying on us? Can they have these things hover over top of our houses and, you know, spy on us and see where we're going and that kind of thing?
Apparently they can. I mean, maybe, you know, a good chief or a good captain would say, you know, you're operating the drone. I better not catch you looking at, you know, Mrs. Yarger in her bikini sunbathing. And if you do, officer, trooper, you're in trouble. But if we have a reason to suspect crime in that area, well, then it's, you know, under their supervision to say that's okay. You know, we hope that we have good leadership that manages well.
And here you go with that wiggle room again. As you guys know, attorneys make a good living, and they also tend to write rules, regulations, and laws, and there's always two sides to almost every, at least two sides. So you use words like probable cause. There's a lot of ways to interpret probable cause. And somebody that's educated and knowledgeable could probably make that phrase suit their needs. Obstruction of justice, that's something that you hear kicked around in the news quite a bit. Simple terms, when you obstruct something, you get in its way, right?
Right.
And justice, did you ever look up the definition of the word justice? It's basically, in street terms, to make things right. So obstruction of justice, you're getting in the way so that things won't be made right. Simple terms. But that can go anywhere. President Trump, they think that somehow this whole Russian, what's the word that they use? It's not a conspiracy, it's a collusion. This whole Russian collusion thing is being used so that they can gather enough information to have an obstruction of justice case against President Trump, because that has more weight to it, more legal weight to it. Now you might start discussion about impeachment, because an obstruction of justice can be considered a misdemeanor. Remember we talked about impeachment, high crimes and misdemeanors? Well, right. What the heck does that mean?
Right?
So there's so much of this stuff that keeps our courts occupied. And I don't think it's by accident, sadly. You know, you think we could simplify it, but...
Right.
So I think that's pretty much it. I'm looking over my notes here. Oh, I forgot the quick question quiz.
Okay.
All right, let me see if I can explain this. All right. We talked about it briefly. So if somebody can name, don't say it out loud if you guys know, okay?
I'll keep my mouth shut.
All right. So if you can name the current Fourth Amendment Supreme Court case that is being considered, and hopefully we'll see a decision released in the fall of this year, 2018, send that information to Civil War Radio, which is our Facebook page.
Right.
You have to be a member of the group, and you can do it in a comment if you want. Or you can leave a voice message at 585-643-5956. So either way, I would suggest go to Civil War Radio, because then you can see other people's comments. What's really nice about putting a comment there, there's usually a time associated with it, so it's easy to tell who got the right answer first. Because of the time.
Yep.
So, go, and that's it. Did I miss anything? Can you guys add anything? Any comments? Any thoughts?
Well, I think this was a great discussion. I mean, it really helps to clarify what some of these amendments are about. So,
and then next week, we'll discuss the Fifth Amendment.
Okay. All right?
So, and then we're going to bunch them up. We'll have a guest in 2 weeks from now, and we're going to try to hit the 6th, 7th, and 8th Amendment all at the same time.
Wow.
So fasten your seatbelts.
We're flying now.
Thanks, Armin.
Thank you, guys.
And next up, we're going to have the boys from Scope, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Okay.
What's the matter, Cupcake? Winter's here, and all you have to look forward to is yellow snow. That Einstein you're dating wants to know where the white goes when the snow melts. Thinking of all the fun you'll have schlepping home at 20 miles an hour? Car won't start, mud, slush, salt, traffic accidents, shoveling, brushing, and wading through a snowdrift just to check the mail? Your boots leak and you only have one glove and it's stuck? Frozen wipers, locks, fingers, toes, and noses. Hey, at Iron Mike's, the Military Exchange, we agree. Winter sucks. So let us help you bear the frozen tundra that is upstate New York. The Military Exchange has everything you'll ever need to kick the crap out of old man winter.
You bastard.
Warm hats, caps, gloves, socks, long underwear, polypro, thermal, wiki, and super wiki. Gore-Tex insulates, wool, jackets, parkas, pants, and boots. There's lots of fun things to do in the snow, but none of it's fun unless you gear up. At Iron Mike's, the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. Stop in and see Corporal Thornton. He'll even show you how to write your name in the snow.
Great googly moogly.
When you hear the phrase,
boots on the ground,
that phrase means our men and women that are in the American Armed Forces. And that means they're ready to fight. They wear the very best gear America has to offer. I'm talking the very best in leather, Gore-Tex, Finsulate, three-layer Vibram soles, Nomex, side zippers, and stitching. Quality that the civilian market can't even come close to offering. When you say quality, you want U.S. government issue. Iron Mike's is the leading distributor for military government contractors. They offer jump boots, Mickey boots, jungle boots, SWAT boots, sniper boots, steel toe, Navy deck boots, and Marine Corps and Army desert boots. Corafram low quarter shoes, mucklucks, extreme cold weather, and lightweight tactical boots in 6, 8, and 10 inches. Iron Mike's takes trade-ins of all your old military boots. Iron Mike's is located at 2485 State Route 332 in Canandaigua. Check us out online at ironmikes.co.
Whoa! We're down south in the rain and the heat. Sure gets hot down there, cooking egg on the concrete. And everybody on the city street will go, whoa! Let the big dog eat.
Welcome back to Civil War Radio, and this is Scope. And Scope is here from all of New York State. And I have with me Mr. Don Smith. And welcome to Scope.
Thank you very much, Tim.
Thank you, sir.
I'd like to pick up, if we can, on a topic that we were started, well, it was a couple of weeks ago. We're talking about due process in particular. And we were discussing the SAFE Act, as you recall, at that time. And today's discussion on the due process that has been, shall we say, removed from law-abiding citizens by the SAFE Act can be seen in a couple of cases, Tim, one of which I'm going to ask you to explain, because there is a veteran. This gentleman came out of Iraq. In fact, he was involved in the original push into Baghdad. Due to a couple of explosions, he ended up with not one, but two breaks in his back. He is now 100% disabled, and he sent us a letter, sent Scope a letter. And I'd like to have you read that, if you would, because that would be a good introduction as to an example of what these veterans are facing. Please, go ahead.
He wrote, "My name is," and we leave that blank, "I am a 100% disabled Operation Iraqi Freedom veteran who was denied a firearm because the VA put me on two medications that completely changed me, and then they refused to help me or reevaluate those medications. And I was forced to go to the ER and was committed for a day. The doctor that saw me in the mental health floor said I never should have been admitted, especially to the mental health floor. Now, I cannot get this removed because it was reported as an involuntary commitment. I have nobody to help me. I live off a fixed income and don't know what to do. The appeals process is unbelievable and meant to be difficult. So even if I do everything on the list, the group of individuals who decide if I should be removed could still deny me. Please help.
Thank you. When this gentleman contacted Scope and sent that message, and I began to become involved in this, he left us a phone number, and I did call him. In our first discussion, he explained about being in Iraq and having a broken back and being disabled, etc., and now suffering from another disease for which he was being treated, which you mentioned in here. But the poor guy was so upset, he broke down on the phone as we were trying to talk. And I just explained to him, that's fine, you know, just hang up, call me back when you feel better, when you feel like talking. So he called back the next day, and we discussed this in further detail. As you noted there, this gentleman was being treated with a couple of medications, neither of which were, shall we say, doing the trick. He was still suffering. So he was placed in the hospital, and while he was in the hospital, he underwent a medication adjustment. In other words, they took away the meds that he was having difficulty with, and they tried some other meds. Now, during this time frame, he had to be in a location in the hospital, and we should all understand this, where he can be observed. In other words, it has to be an observation ward of some kind. And unfortunately, this is where people get tripped up. There's only one location in a hospital which you can be placed for observation. Do you know where that is?
Mental health.
Mental health ward, psych ward, call it what you wish. Okay. Upon his entrance into that ward and the documentation thereafter, someone either directly or inadvertently indicated that he had been involuntarily admitted. Not the case. He went in there voluntarily. The involuntary admission caused someone at the hospital, medical provider in there, don't know who, he has no idea, to call the state, what they call ISAR's line. We mentioned that in the first interview when I was in here. It's a direct line to the Department of Criminal Justice Services and the state police. And it's all part of the mental health amendment that I referred to earlier, 9.46. It's a new section in the mental health law that requires the phone call to be made if a medical provider believes that there's a likelihood that someone may hurt themselves or someone else. Okay. Now, if you recall, I pointed out that the other sections of the mental health law require a second criterion. And doctors have always utilized this, and that is immediate danger. But when the SAFE Act was written, that second criterion was deliberately left out. So if there's likelihood, they call the state, you're reported, and as a result, unbeknownst to him, by the way, he was placed on the FBI's disqualified list. He was no longer able to buy a gun. Now, here's a veteran. He came home. He did not have a pistol permit. He owned no guns. Following up on what you read, Tim, the gentleman left the hospital. He received some medication. you know, to help his condition. And sometime later, he tried to buy a shotgun. And he was denied by the FBI. And when he began to investigate this, it turns out the FBI turned him over to an agency in Albany, Nick's Relief and Safe Act Agency, which he later found is run by the state police. There's no physical address. There's only a phone number and an email address. But he spoke with that agency, with someone in the office, and he was never able to resolve this. He explained to them that he had been in the hospital, he went there voluntarily, they changed his medication, etc. Did not seem to matter. Okay. Now, that's one case. Here's another gentleman. This individual, like the first one, was a veteran. Okay. In fact, he had a pistol permit and handguns, long guns, and for many, many years, and had never had a problem. Here's a letter that this gentleman wrote to his senator, and I want to read portions of this, if I may. We have met with you, Senator, last year and expressed our concerns with the SAFE Act, especially the lack of due process. It causes individuals like myself to unfairly lose our pistol licenses and firearms under a new section 9.46 of the New York State Mental Health Law and Title 18 USC, that means U.S. Code, 922G4. This was a violation of my constitutional rights under the 5th and 14th Amendments, which indicate nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Both Dean Skelos and Sheldon Silver enjoyed the full benefit of due process after denying it to an entire group of citizens, being firearms owners. However, I was assumed guilty from the very beginning, and I received no semblance of due process. Should I assume that my state government ignores due process for their law-abiding citizens while granting it only to elected officials? I have earnestly attempted to regain my full gun rights in New York State by communicating with the NICS Appeals and SAFE Act Agency in Albany as directed by the FBI. See, the FBI told him that he had to deal with the agency in New York State that had originally turned him into the FBI. The FBI referred me to this agency when I attempted to be removed from the FBI's list of disqualified potential firearms owners. Now, as a result of being disqualified by the FBI when he applied for a gun, he was to remain on this disqualified list until the agency in Albany changed that decision. The FBI would not change it. Okay. I understand the agency is operated by the New York State Police, and its funding exists, by the way, in the state budget. And Scope has made attempts to determine the amount of funding in the state budget each year for the SAFE Act, and have been working with our legislators to try to remove that funding, if possible. This gentleman then goes on to say, my efforts to date have been unsuccessful. It was my opinion from the beginning that the state agency had incorrect records regarding my medical visit to a hospital. This was presented to a judge, county judge, in August of 2015, 12 long months later, and by the way, after he'd hired an attorney and spent quite a bit of money. The judge wrote a court order finding no cause for the actions taken by the state. The judge returned my license and firearms, but despite his court order, I've been unsuccessful in my continued efforts to remove myself from the disqualified FBI status. And it's only because of the Albany agency that is run by the state police, and it's a refusal to correct the FBI's records. A lady at the agency suggested I ask the hospital to provide proof that my admittance was voluntary. My inquiry to the hospital resulted in a letter from the chairman of the psychiatric department stating that the hospital records indicate my admittance to the hospital in 2015 was completely voluntary. And, in quotes, your admission, this is from the letter provided to him and to the agency, your admission and subsequent treatment on the psychiatric unit should not have triggered a report to NICS or through the SAFE Act. But it did. This confirms that someone at the hospital incorrectly identified my admittance as involuntary, and that was a trigger. The NICS Appeals and SAFE Act Agency in Albany received a copy of the doctor's letter. I have a copy of it, but the agency refuses to clear my status with the FBI. I see this as part of an extensive and indiscriminate effort by New York State and its governor to confiscate firearms. And that's important because the governor said in December of 2012, confiscation is an option, quote unquote. Confiscation has been taking place and is taking place on a daily basis in this state. He now advocates again without due process, he being the governor here, by the way, the removal of judicial discretion by ordering the removal of all guns upon the issuance of an order of protection. Now, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but the governor is attempting to have a law passed which would, in effect, remove all firearms, pistol permits, handguns, long guns, if anyone is issued an order of protection. Interesting. I would appreciate any efforts on your part to correct the situation. Now, in doing some research on this, the references to Title 18 in the U.S. Code, in there you'll find a number of pieces of information. But this one particular section, this 922 G4 that he refers to, this was written, by the way, and published by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, ATF, revised May of 2009. And I have called this agency. I've spoken with them. They can't do a thing for this gentleman. But what's interesting is if you look at their own publication and what it says, they talk about any person who has been adjudicated as a mentally defective, which neither of these two veterans were, or committed to a mental institution. Neither one of them really, truly were committed to a mental institution, is prohibited under federal law from shipping, transporting, receiving, or possessing any firearm or ammunition, etc., etc. Now, a person that's adjudicated as a mentally defective, we won't discuss that because it doesn't enter into this picture whatsoever, either one of these. The second part, though, a person is committed to a mental institution. Now, this is coming from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, ATF. If that person has been formally committed to a mental institution by a court, a board, a commission, or other lawful authority. That did not occur in either case. The term includes a commitment to a mental institution involuntarily. The ATF is very clear about that, involuntarily. The term does not include, and this is in bold print, does not include a person in a mental institution for observation or by voluntary admission. I'll read that again. The term committed to a mental institution, which is what tripped up both of these veterans, does not include a person in a mental institution for observation or by voluntary admission. Now, let's look at this term mental institution. How does the ATF view that? What's their definition of a mental institution? They say it includes mental health facilities, a mental hospital, sanitarium, psychiatric facilities, and other facilities that provide diagnosis by licensed professionals of mental retardation or mental illness, including a psychiatric ward in a general hospital. And that's exactly what happened to both of these veterans. They ended up in a psychiatric ward in a general hospital here in Rochester. Was one. Okay. I would say this. Confiscation has begun in New York State.
Through mental health.
As a result of this new mental health provision in the mental health law. And it was part of the SAFE Act. That's why we're fighting the SAFE Act. There's no hearing, no notification, no due process. You do not have an opportunity to plead your case or face your accuser. You don't even know who your accuser is. Your home is entered. Your valued treasures, guns in this case, are removed. And, by the way, this violates some of what we talked about, or what Arnold talked about, with being secure in your home. Definite violations. You're losing your property and your right to due process under the law. And it's happening every day. All because of the SAFE Act. This didn't happen, by the way, in communist China. This didn't happen in Russia. It's happening here in New York State. And citizens need to be aware of it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Don.
You're welcome.
That was very good. And we'll have a chance later in other weeks to discuss this more. If you have any questions or you want to get in touch with Scope, Don, what's a good way for them to get a hold of you? I know you have a great Facebook page now.
The website, scopenewyork.org, by the way, I would suggest going there and looking at the 8-minute video which describes the second veteran situation. You'll get a good picture of what happened to him. But go to scopenewyork.org, you may contact me if you wish. If you have a question, I've had several people doing so. Just had a gentleman from Connecticut that I was dealing with who wants to come into New York State, doesn't know how to do it when he has pistols to bring in. You know, how can he continue to possess them and so forth? My number is 315-398-0195.
Great.
Thanks.
Thank you. That was Scope from New York, and we will be right back after these messages.
Clerical, can I get a drink? Sumatra, pull down the shades. Duro, lock the door. We're going to party. Can you hear me? How long have I been on? Welcome! Enlisted and officers, WMs and Devil Dogs, I, Corporal Tim Thornton, your host for tonight. This is the DD214 and Laurel Cigar Lounge. Fresh from the Dominican Republic, Hector Motto Cigars, here at the Military Exchange in Canandaigua, New York. Smoking lamp is out.
Shaggy De Chic Pet Spa, a natural choice in pet grooming, located at 1010 South Clinton Avenue in Rochester.
In Canandaigua, New York. Canandaigua, New York. Smoking lamp is out.
Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. A Aggie DeChic Choice Spa. And Pet Grooming. Natural Choice and Pet Grooming. South Clinton Avenue in Rochester.
At the North. At here. At Canandaigua, New York. Canandaigua, New York.
Aggie Dishrol Choice Spa. Aggie Dishrol Choice Spa. And Pet Grooming. Located in Penn, Grooming. South Clinton Avenue in Rochester.
At the North. At here. At Canandaigua, New York. Canandaigua, New York.
Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Pet Grooming. Located in Pet Grooming. Located in Rochester.
At the North. At here. At Canandaigua, New York. Canandaigua, New York. New York.
Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Pet Grooming. Nabbies and Pet Grooming. Rochester.
Here.
In Rochester.
At the North. At here. At Canandaigua. New York. Canandaigua. New York. New York. New York.
Aggie DeChic. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. 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 Aggie
DeChic Pet Spa.
Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie
DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa.
Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa.
Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa.
Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa.
Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa.
Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie
DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic Pet Spa.
Aggie DeChic. Aggie DeChic. Aggie DeChic. Aggie DeChic. Aggie DeChic. Aggie DeChic. Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic. Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic. Pet Spa.
Aggie DeChic. Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic. Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic. Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic. Pet Spa. Aggie DeChic. Pet Spa.
Aggie DeChic, Peggy DeChic, Aggie DeChic, Peggy DeChic, Aggie DeChic, Aggie DeChic, Pet Spa, Aggie DeChic, Pet Spa, Aggie DeChic, Pet Spa, Aggie DeChic, Pet Spa,
Aggie DeChic, Pet Spa, Aggie DeChic, Pet Spa, Aggie DeChic, Pet Spa, Aggie DeChic, Pet Spa, Aggie DeChic, Pet Spa, Aggie DeChic, Pet Spa, Aggie DeChic, Pet Spa, Aggie DeChic, Pet Spa, Aggie DeChic, Pet Spa,
Peggy DeChic, Peggy DeChic, Peggy DeChic, Peggy DeChic.